have a friend, good friend, who's not a meditator, or not true, does meditate somewhat, not part of this group, who has this very strong sense that we, as a society, as a race of beings, as people subjected to a lot of outside information, this person feels that we are all being played. And I have become more and more convinced that that's true. I can be very specific in terms of the time we're living in right now, that the socio-political climate that we are in has engaged the collective mind in a way that is unique to my experience. I've been around for a lot of collective activity since I was a kid. I mean, it started out when I was a little boy and went to school, and all the kids were talking about I Love Lucy. And I wasn't allowed to stay up to 8 o'clock at night. So I didn't see I Love Lucy. And I felt I was out of the collective, that there was stuff going on in the world that I was not privy to. And I begged my mother to let me become part of the whole. Let me watch I Love Lucy. And then I even pushed to watch December Bride, which came after that. And I suspect for most of you, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But these were what were called then the water cooler shows, the things that everyone talked about in my classroom at second grade. And I became part of the whole. I became part of the collective because I could talk about Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and Ethel and, forget her husband's name, Fred, thank you. there were three TV channels in those days, and you either watched one or the other, or maybe none of the above. But nowadays, of course, there's a huge proliferation of media, as we all know, overwhelming in some ways, deeply engaging, and much of it is there to distract us, entertain us, and sell commercials. The people who are putting all of this in front of us have a major benefit from it, because the more they can stimulate us to watch, and the more they can throw things at us that we think we need and want, or don't want but think we do want, we have this involvement in the culture, and it's very, very stimulating. And there are times where it's made to look, as it is now, vitally important. The course of our social being, our country, our political lives, our personal lives are being drawn into an incredible kind of reality television drama. And I am guilty of being sucked in by it. I don't know about all of you. I think some of you are less inclined to watch all this. My friend who claims to be aware that she's being played, I respect that. And this has been a really interesting journey for me. I've described, I think, to all of you that somewhere in the 3 or 4 month ago period where these awful events were happening with immigrants losing their children at the border, that something happened to me and they found my button. They found my emotional button. I trace it back to when I was 5, forgive me if I've already spoken about this, but my memory is not great. But when I was 5, I was in a group of people having their tonsils removed. There were like 30 of us all at the same time. It was like assembly line tonsil removal. And we were all kept overnight in cribs. And it was a horrible experience, traumatic on some level. But they started out by asking me what my favorite ice cream was. And I said, chocolate. And then they put the mask over my head that smelled worse than anything I'd ever smelled before. I passed out or went to sleep. I woke up with a terrible pain in my throat and a dish of strawberry ice cream. So I was betrayed on so many levels. But then in the morning, we all tried to sleep at night with our sore throats, and the mothers and fathers of all the other kids started coming and taking their children away. And I'm watching all these kids leave, and I'm left in a crib with nobody coming. And I suddenly had an experience of being abandoned, that I was going to be left in a crib and that my parents were not going to come. Why they were late that day, I have no idea, but it created this traumatic moment that allowed me my entire life to be very sensitive to the experience of abandonment. And it dawned on me when I became so sensitive to these kids being taken away from their parents that it was not just an issue in the abstract, it was personal. It hurt. I knew what these kids felt like because I was in that crib and I had been abandoned. Now, my parents came late bearing toys, which were memorable toys. And I was grateful to see them and I always clung to them afterwards with enormous affection. But I had learned a big lesson in the human experience, which was attachment and love and what it means to have that pulled apart. And I decided, when I saw that this was happening in the culture, that I would do something about it. And so I decided to, as you all know, this is an old story, make a movie dramatizing this unseen journey, because we didn't get to watch it. We got to see the after effect of parents crying for their children, children we could hear on the radio crying for their parents, but they were invisible. And so I said, make it visible. And I made these films. And then these films are done, and we are in the process of trying to make them visible to the world. And now I'm learning a whole new series of things. One is the political arena is not exactly waiting for my materials. That these people, these operatives out in that world, have their own agenda. They are earning money based on the things they make, not the things I give them. That the world is not ready to necessarily take these images and put them in front of other people, especially because the news cycle, of course, has moved so quickly away from children being taken from their parents. That's already 4 months ago and is meaningless now to people worried about. You know, those of you who listen to this tape from years from now won't remember what this is about, but there's a big thing that went on just recently about the appointment of a man named Judge Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, to the Supreme Court, and the horrible surroundings of people accusing him of sexual harassment. That already just passed yesterday. This guy got elected or nominated and voted into the Supreme Court, so we have moved on. So I don't know what the next news cycle is, and I don't know how many news cycles one can go to before one can go, oh my God, it's not going to end. It's going to go on and on. And if I were to watch television every night because I feel engaged in the news cycle and engaged in the survival of the country that I live in, it feels like a good citizen to watch all of this and be engaged and to do what you can do. And I can't totally separate from that, but I am very, very aware that the people I am watching talking about all this stuff are interrupted every 12 minutes by people trying to sell me stuff. Now I have a thing that fast forwards and I don't have to watch all of that. But I know that there is something going on in the world around us that people are sustaining themselves by promoting their own agendas, by promoting their own success and well-being, and that the world is, as it has always been, a place of survival. Getting what you want, getting what you need, getting your power base to experience and establish your importance in the universe, if you will, or your place in the scheme of things. We're all trying to do that. It is a human journey. You start to learn it in elementary school. You start to learn it in sports. You start to learn primacy, that I'm number one, the good guy, not the bad guy, that you're a good student, not a bad student. You get placed in some sort of characterization of who and what you are, and then you buy into that, and then you live a life based on trying to either get out of that or prove it to be different or to own it in a whole different way. And what happens is everything around you is playing you. You're being played. You are being reactive based on who you think you are, what you think you are, and the world knows brilliantly how to keep you in your discomforts or your comforts or your insecurities or your shame or your inflated sense of self. Whatever it is, the universe is really good at keeping this game going because it perpetuates itself. It keeps life alive. It keeps it going. And in some ways, it is incredibly fun. Even when it's not. Even when you hate it, you cannot turn away. You cannot look elsewhere. So we are caught in these cycles of being played and, in a sense, present ourselves to the table. We enter the game. Now, there is this idea of spiritual life or separation from the game. Were you going to turn off the TV, let's say, turn away from the world, go inward into a place of silence and quietude and protection and safety, and the world evaporates for your meditative space, and you can just go inside and get quiet and calm and recollected, and you can kind of own yourself again. That is a wonderful, clear opportunity that you have to step back from the being played dynamic that the world has. But, big but, the world is playing you to meditate. The world is pushing you to turn away from it. You are being played. Being separate from the world or being engaged in the world is reactionary. You are part of the whole drama. You are part of this strange dynamic that either pulls you in or pushes you away. But don't think, that your meditative life is a transcendent experience, separating you from the societal, cultural dynamics. You're still in it. You're in it for a lot of reasons. One is you're in a body. That body has to find toothpaste to brush its teeth. What kind of toothpaste? What kind of toothbrush? What kind of soap do you wash yourself with? What about the stuff you wash in the sink or the dishwasher? You see where this is going. Society is programming endlessly the things you have to do. Even if you're a meditator, even if you have air baths, and you don't use water and you don't use soap or whatever. I don't know what people choose to do to make them free of being sold soap and water. You're still in some fundamental way reacting to the given. And where is the transcendent where is the peace that surpasseth understanding? So, this brings me to an old story that I've told many times, because I think it's a fundamental story, but it's a really important story. It's a Zen story. It's about a Zen guy who's been meditating for years and has found his enlightenment. And a woman who lived nearby him has an affair with a man that creates a little baby, and she cannot in any way have ownership of this baby and live the life she wants to live. And so she claims that this quiet little monk was the father. He is ostracized. She takes the baby and says, "You raise it." And when this baby arrives at his quiet space, cabin, cave, whatever, he goes, "Aso." Okay. And he raises this child, nurtures, feeds, comforts, bathes, does all the things that one does with a child. And at some point, the mother marries the man who was the father and realizes she wants her child back. And she goes to the monk and she said, "I need my child. I want my child back." This man loves this child, but he goes, "Aso." And he hands over the child, and the child leaves, and he continues to live his life. I always imagined that this monk was disinterested in the child, that because he was detached, because he was in a place of aso all the time, he was able to stand back from the experience of raising the child. But it dawned on me just recently that that was completely wrong. This monk loved that child. This monk loved the human connection with this child. This monk fed this child, nurtured this child, and did everything for this child. And yet, when this child was taken away, he found in his deep acceptance of the what is, the ability to live in the absence of what he had had, in the absence as much as in the presence. In my universe of abandonment, that abandoning, that taking away of that child, would for me probably be a source of phenomenal suffering. And the great lesson of that suffering is not that you don't suffer, but that you go, "Aso." Aso does not mean you have risen above anything. It means you accept everything, including the having the child, the losing the child, the joy of raising the child, the suffering of losing that child. It's all part of the totality. It's part of the what is, the oneness of what is. And I say all that to you and to myself, that you can be played by the world and still go, "Aso." You can go yes to the very drama that circulates around you and through you. You can take on the totality of your experience and know that there are two basic components to that. One is being lost in it, and one is finding yourself through it. Finding yourself through it means, aso, I get it, yes. The journey to aso is a life's work. You don't just go aso, okay, because it will have no authentic quality. It'll be a dismissal of everything that you believe and human beings are. Arriving at aso means losing that which you love the most and going. And let me tell you a horrible story. You are going to lose everything that you love the most. Sorry. And you are either going to be in a place of deep grief and anxiety and tormented by this, looking for every possible way to not have to engage the feeling and the emotion and the heart of it. And you all know there's all these things out there in society that they will give you to help you not have to look at it or feel it or deal with it. There's so many ways to look away. There's so many ways to be distracted. There's so many ways to calm the system down for a period of time. Or there's this thing that comes out of stillness, that comes out of meditative practice, that comes out of an awakening to what is, where you go, okay. And if you want to see it at play in its most extreme form, come to the end of your life. Come to the end. And all of you are doing that. You are coming to the end of your life. Yes, you can give yourself 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, whatever it is, 50, 80 years yet to go. But you are arriving and moving toward the very end at any given moment. And as we all know, as Rudy would say, life turns on a dime. Could be in 2 minutes. Not preparing for that ending does not absolve you of having to deal with it. Having to deal with finality and letting go of everything is, I believe, forgive me, this is a projection based on my internal experience, that at the very, very end of existence, there is a slow motion journey that allows you to live out everything that you didn't do when you were alive, in which it presents you with the totality of everything you ever had, with the dimension of love that you felt and didn't express, with the hunger for holding it that you never quite grasped, and in slow motion, it undoes all of that. It is a very, very big journey. I may be wrong. Maybe it's blackout done and you're free. But my sense of it is somewhere in the bardo state of the undoing of the human journey, you have to go through this process. You have to arrive at aso. You have to arrive there. You can do it now, or you can do it in the last millisecond that goes on forever of letting go. Letting go is not not having, it's not not tasting, it's not pretending you don't care. Letting go is having everything with such deep, profound appreciation and poignancy that even as you have it, you are already letting it go, but you don't actually let it slip through your fingers. You're just holding it in a way that will make it possible for it to evaporate. It is so beautiful to hold life while it is leaving. And I can only tell you that's what's happening every second of your life. It is leaving you. And if you understand that it's leaving you and you hug it with all the care and compassion and joy and beauty and love that you can muster, life becomes what it has always been meant to be, an exquisite journey into the realm of temporary being. Temporary being. That's what this is. It's a journey into the thing that's already taking place and leaving. But because you have this awakened awareness of your own temporary aspect, your own impermanence, you will live life fully. It doesn't mean when you go, ah, so I accept, that you don't feel life. It means that you feel it to the depth of possibility and let it go at the same time. That the most delicate, beautiful, exquisite love of your being, you are having and surrendering simultaneously. How do you do it? How do you do that? Practice. Practice. If you sit still daily and you find quietude and centeredness and a place inside that is strangely not attached to anything, that is just a kind of awareness and presence that free floats into this world of stuff, and you can find that space, you become aware that in the middle of manifested reality is an unmanifested knowing, an unmanifested being. And you start to see that manifestation and the unmanifested state are part and parcel of one collective thing. You start to make this journey into the very space that ultimately you're headed to, that which precedes creation. It's a journey you make in your life. And if you're lucky, you arrive at a place like this monk who was sitting quietly in his little hut, who went, aso. But don't pretend that that little hut is a place of so much detachment that you don't feel the human journey. When that baby is brought into that hut, love erupts. When you feed that baby, care for it, wipe its butt, take it for walks, play with it, you are a parent. When that baby is taken from you, you experience suffering and loss that is beyond understanding. You either rent your clothes and cry and scream and do all of this stuff, or you work really hard and you go, aso, aso. Trust me, that monk was learning how to die. You are here learning how to die. If there's one thing to learn in human life, it must be that, because it's the only place you are going. It's the only thing you are headed toward. That's all there is. Again, this is temporary. Don't get caught. To go back for a moment to being played. Being played. We are all being played. We are all being played. You have an opportunity to react to how you are played. And that opportunity goes, I don't think I'm going to watch the news tonight. I don't want to look at the newspaper. I'm going to read a book. It goes, I'm going for a walk. It goes, you know, you're sitting in the Starbucks and everybody's talking about it, so you might as well listen. Your best friends are coming at you, so you're talking about this stuff. And then you take moments off and you go away. This is you being in charge of how you're being played. And that's very valuable. You have some control. You can actually go, turn off the television, turn off the news, turn off the newspapers, move away from the world. But you can't move away from the results of what's happening in the world. You know, I refer a lot to climate change. You can turn off the news. You don't have to know that there's hurricanes on the East Coast. But that weather patterning, which is changing everywhere, is going to change around you. Whether you know about it as part of a larger cycle of events or whether you don't know about it, it's happening. So just not paying attention doesn't free you from the reality of the environmental space you live in and ultimately the biological space you live in. Because the weather patterns will change, your body will change, your sleep patterns will change, your urinary patterns will change, your digestive patterns will change. Everything is going to change. So even if you're not paying attention to that stuff, this stuff will grab your attention. And in the end, what do? Well, you go to doctors, you get medication, you do all of these things, but finally, you just go, what are you gonna do? Aso. The sooner you learn aso, the better. It's a better way to get through your day. It's a better way to get through your life. It doesn't mean you don't feel it. It doesn't mean you don't choose to engage it. You can be out there and fully informed and fully involved. But let me say, for example, this movie that I've made, trying to express the problems of immigrants arriving in America and having children taken away by a government that I find, you know, irresponsible and irrepressibly bad. This movie may or may never have any impact. My job was to make the movie. My job was to follow out this fear of abandonment to the logical conclusion is I wanted to share with the world how terrible that is and to affect how people vote as a result. That's what I wanted to do. Whether I succeed or don't succeed is beyond my grasp. When November 6th comes, all that time and all that effort for me is completely past tense. Holding on to any of that, angry that it got less coverage than I wanted or it got dismissed or whatever it may have been the result of it, although, you know, it's having a funny, strange little life out there. But whatever happens, aso. I'm telling you, I've had to do that with everything in my life. I've made a lot of movies, some of which were reviewed so badly that I could barely walk after reading the reviews. All I can tell you is I'm at a place in life where it's hardly as if that ever happened. Freedom, liberation, is an acceptance, an aso, to the totality of existence. And you can arrive at that. It arrives to you. The more you surrender, the more you let go, the more you breathe deeply, the more you open your heart, the more you take life on, you will discover that the gift of spiritual practice is that you can have it all and be totally free simultaneously. This is what we're working on. It's what we're working toward. There's so many ways to misunderstand what I'm saying. There's so many ways of thinking that you can somehow transcend the world. I don't think you transcend it, you just say yes to it. In fact, what really happens is there's no you to say yes. There is just a yes. There's just a yes, or a so. If there's a no, there's still a you and an it. If there's a no, then you have something to work on. If you find yourself saying no to stuff, pay attention, because you don't have to turn it to a yes, but you do have to turn it into, okay, awesome. I can elaborate and elaborate, but I think I've made the point. I guess the concluding idea is you're being played. do the work. Find yourself victimized by it or simply aware of it and let it be. Okay. Any fears, worries, concepts, concerns, criticisms?
I use my hand on criticism, if that wasn't.
Okay.
I find myself, I have been sitting for a few years, and I have a linear concept of, you know, my thoughts keep running, and it's a concept of, it's like a liquor store. I go to the, keep going to the liquor store, so I sit and meditate, hoping not to enter the door and turn right and walk away. And so in a way, I guess I want to ask a question that part of me, whether it's the ego or whatever, that plays me to go to that store of thinking that I can think my way out of things, rather than be, I'm kind of feel I'm being played that way.
That's a brilliant statement, and I'm going to jump in here just for a second, because it's not just societal things that are playing us. Our mind takes it on, and it's our mind that plays us all the time. We are victims of our own mind much more than we are the victims of what society is doing, because the mind reacts to that stuff, and then it's the noise that we basically are played by. It can make things out there much worse than they are, and it can make things better than they are, but it's still the mind that's trying to do stuff. Quieting the mind is the secret of the aso, you know, because the mind is going to come in and do all of this stuff, but if you just go aso, then you discover the still pointedness that frees you from your own playing yourself. Being played is something that most people do all the time. Whenever I talk to anybody and they start telling me their bullshit, all their stuff, I realize, boy, they're playing themselves. They've created their own drama, their own universe to live in.
The problem for me, going to that store, once I walk in, I forget that I'm in the store. I'm caught up in it.
Of course.
So I guess coming to practice just, daily and weekly kind of helps.
If this was easy, everybody would be doing it and the world would be a much different place. It's a universe full of separate universes. We're all these separate entities trying to learn how to make our way through something that is incomprehensible, and yet societally formed so that we think there's a consensus. But it's not really a consensus. It's really we build the world that we inhabit based on inputs from outside and what sources we pick. And we build that world, we react to that world, and we become condemned by, in many ways, that world. We need to find, as human beings, how to not give so much power to the outer world and the mind that has engaged that world and feeds us its own stuff day in, day out. That's a journey. Still pointedness, getting quiet, is the beginning of separating from mind power. You can begin to go, nope, nope. Thought comes up, nope, not going there. When you start to have that kind of inner freedom, you start to become free of so much of what the world throws at you. On the other hand, you're still human. So there are things, the mind has positive aspect. It does try to protect you and guide you and help you in life. So you have to begin to distinguish healthy mind from sick mind, let's say, good mind from a bad mind, all of these qualities that can come into and infect the computer. Some of us really are very infected machines. So how do you get disinfected? You have to go through, get very quiet, look at the problems and go, I don't have a machinery background to tell you how to clear the programming exactly, but you just start going no to programs. Just go no, just delete, I guess. Delete, and try it. Try deleting a program and then see whether there's 500 different backups for that program all over your computer. So you delete it in one place and it comes back from another. But somehow or another, you have to do a search and let it go. none of this is easy. You don't get to Aso by just saying, oh, Aso. This is your work. This is the practice. This is what we're here for. And there aren't even very many people doing this. People are, the easy version of this is just have a hot fudge sundae. It doesn't take care of anything, but for the moment, it really, you don't, there's no problems. Life is sweet.
I guess I'm wondering what, when you had that belief or drive to create the documentary, why, what inside made you not do also to that? But instead, go forward and
clean. The answer to that is, why did this man, when this baby came in, go shopping, find the food, find the bath water, buy diapers, whatever it is he had to do, why did he do that? Why did he just say, I'll just put the baby in the end of the cave and not think about it? It's a living, breathing thing. This was a living, breathing thing for me. It's like life brings you this stuff, and Buddha talks about you do something called right action, which is you fulfill the thing that's brought to you, but you do it from a position of do your best, and when you're done, whatever that may be, you move on. You don't always move on easily from children because they're always still around, but you move on from the infant to the one-year-old, to the two-year-old, to the five-year-old, there's a kind of progression of movement. But the reality is, being aso doesn't mean that you're not engaged. Aso means that you are engaged from a very still and deep and profound place. You do it at any moment going, thy will be done. You're serving something greater, and you're not going to be caught in the system if you can help it. And if you are caught, you go, aso, caught. I mean, aso is a really interesting idea because it's not a detached, disinterested space. It can be wildly attached and wildly interested, but you get it. There's an awareness in which it reveals itself. And so you live with context. The biggest problem with human life is it's not contextual. It's like, this is all there is. I have to make this money. I've got to get rich. I've got to be the biggest, most famous, the most wonderful person that ever lived. You live in this really unbelievably strange world hanging over an abyss called death. And all this, it's like, what are you doing? And you can't ask that of most people. But a spiritually evolved person goes, this is a dance over the abyss. What is that? How do I do this? And you start to form a different kind of relationship to your life. It's not grabbing and holding because you can't hold it. It is a constant letting go and watching what it is. During the making of the videos, the immigrant videos, there were so many opportunities for me to go, this isn't going to happen. So, I mean, one after another after another. I mean, I haven't delineated all the struggle of making those films, but there were so many moments where it just was, you know, this boy doesn't want to cry, or he wants to cry at all the wrong times, you know, or, you know, so many things went wrong during the making of it, and I kept looking at Obstacle. Obstacle was really an interesting teacher for me, because I thought, I'm doing something that is right action. Why is there Obstacle? That's a really big understanding. There's an obstacle because life is obstructed, always. All of our action is up against stuff. And how we deal with the obstruction is how we form our being, our essence. And learning how to be obstructed, once you get hit a number of times, you go, okay. And you start to move around obstruction, or you step back from obstruction, or you don't care, you plow through it. You learn all these amazing lessons by doing the right thing. Obstruction is not a bad thing. It's a test, maybe, if it's a bad word, but it determines how much are you willing to do. How hard are you willing to work? And people who plow through and plow through and plow through have achievement. And achievement is very valuable in the human experience, but it's mostly valuable if you can let it go. If you try to walk around holding on to your achievement, you're gonna be trapped by it. So it's have it, arrive at that, feel the fulfillment of that, and let it go.
So November 6th would be a hope, is that enough people will recognize that as an opportunity to do right action.
Yes.
And then let it go.
Yes. And we're going to have to either let go of having achieved, I'm talking about liberal elite people like me, who want to see love and joy and happiness and right things happen in the world, and not have immigrant children taken from their families, and not have sexual harassment people on the Supreme Court. Sorry, I know people who are listening to this on the other side of the spectrum are probably turning it off anyway, but I can only say that if the pendulum doesn't swing in the way that I would like it to swing, I'm still going to have to go, And it's really like, you go to the doctor and you're waiting to hear about the results of the cancer, and he's going to say you've got 2 months to live, or you've got 2 years or 10 years to live, or something. You're fine, or you're going to die. How do you react to that? When the pendulum goes one direction, it's like, oh boy, this is not good for us. Or it's like, oh, I get another moment of freedom, another moment of possibility. Who are you in that moment? The society is experiencing this now, not just us. But there really are, I mean, this is a long conversation, but what's going on right now is affecting all of us in ways beyond anything we understand. The cosmos is shifting, and we are all in it and caught by it, and we're all finding our way through it or not. November 6th is an indicator. Just a tiny indicator of whether it can shift in a way that bends more toward love and light, or more toward, you know, chaos and insanity. Whatever it is, we will be there after the fact. And I would venture to say the smartest thing would be to say aso. And then to do or not do what you feel you have to do. Really interesting time. I've never been alive in a time like this exactly. You know, I've had, you know, relatives in Russia and new people, and there were people in Germany who experienced this kind of stuff. You know, so it's not new to the world, but it's new to me, and it's new to us. We have to, who are we in it? Dan, do you have a question? Okay.
I think you kind of answered it by, you know, just saying, you know, to be quiet, but the question is, if we're concentrating on the last moment in passing, are we not missing the present moment by that, if we're only thinking about other things or being prepared for the end? Does that take away from the dance above the abyss?
Well, I'm not sure where you're talking about, why you're talking about concentrating on the past. I think it's all...
No, not on the past, on the future. If we're really working on preparing for that moment to pass, does that take away from having the ice cream cone or being present in the moment?
I mean, it's a question you have to ask yourself. For me, the end is always this moment. This is the last moment. You know, live it. I'm not living for a final moment. God knows what that is. This moment is gone. It's gone. This one's here. In the moment you are living in is both arriving and disappearing simultaneously. Learning how to absorb the truth of impermanence at the very core of its existence, which is the present moment, is everything. This moment is the arrival of everything you've ever wanted and the loss of everything you've ever dreamt of, all happening right here. Who knows what's next? Who knows? Nobody knows. Is there a next? You don't know. Live this in a fulfilled way. This is really the important thing. I'm not trying to say, worry about the future. The future is going to come at us one way or the other. The only given in the future is that we're will be totally dissolved. That's the only given. The miracle is we're not dissolved right now. The miracle is this is happening. I say live in that with an awareness of there is a was and there is a future, but they're all right now. It's all right here. And you can make choices based on how do I live this moment? How do I live this miracle? You can make choices. The more informed it is, the better. The more awake it is, the more aware you are, the more encompassing you are of the totality, the more you will dance the dance over the abyss. Does that get at it?
No, I mean, I guess, yes, but you talk about that we're all headed there and that it's better to prepare for that last moment, which is, I mean, whether it's 2 minutes from now or 20 years in the future. But I get it. I actually get it. Being present. Or I think it is.
Yeah, I don't think it's to spend your life staring at the last moment, but knowing that finality is a truth that is you can't get beyond in a materialistic, biological sense. I think if you do your meditation deeply, you will begin to arrive at a place that tells you that the biological end is not the end. But it is the end of that particular biology, body, mind, persona. Something else will arise, but in fact it has never not been there. And so you get to know that before that happens.
So what if, because you think in terms of linear timeline, what if time didn't really matter and everything happened at the same time, then we focus on what we can experience right now and we try to do exactly what you just said we should do, which is be in alignment with our values and everything, including our link to beyond the universe, above the universe, and then all the our materialistic being and other beings. It doesn't matter anymore. We just try to exist multidimensionally without thinking about it.
I think multidimensional experience is a rarity. It's there, it definitely can happen, and as you expand your awakening or your realization, you begin to be aware of all of this in a timeless, spaceless reality, so that it is a whole different way of reacting to it, but it doesn't make this not essential. This is essential. This is an imprint, if you will, of infinite, spaceless, timeless reality. How it works, I have no clue. I can only tell you this is happening now, and I do know that it is something beyond anything our mind can conceptualize. We can talk about it and try to make ourselves crazy or give ourselves clarity, but all I can tell you is if you can find some still pointedness, you will find an entry point into the wisdom of Aso. And that's what we're here to do. Thank you.
Thank you.